Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Hello, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here with the Wrestle Horror Podcast. As I am looking at the screen, my co-host Donnie Hoover is to my left. I don't know how you see him, but I see him to my left.
On mine, I'm on your right.
Donnie, what's going on?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Doing good. How's everybody doing?
Oh, it's been a week. I hate FedEx. And I will continue to hate FedEx.
Yep.
But we're not going to worry about FedEx right now. We're going to welcome our new guests for this episode of the Wrestle Horror Podcast. I am, of course, talking about Jonathan and Crystal from Haunt Weekly, the podcast. Guys, how are you doing?
We're doing well. I mean, every week in 2020 is represented about 10 months in normal human time. So we did well these past 10 months, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So how have you guys been, given the global situation, as some people put it, what have you been finding are some of the unusual things that you've found during your podcasts as far as the COVID goes?
Through the podcast, I don't know. I think what I've noticed a lot has been a lot of confusion, honestly, and especially for haunted attractions, because haunting is such a small industry. I mean, we think of ourselves as this big nationwide blockbuster industry, but the reality is a single blockbuster movie makes more than all haunted attractions combined, you know, in a single year. We're blown out of the water by even a fraction of like the movie industry. And the result of that is we kind of fly under the radar for government a lot of times. And when the regulation of something like COVID comes out, there's so many higher priorities. Mm-hmm. And they don't bother talking to the haunts until, oh God, haunts open in a week. Oh, we got to get regulated.
Yeah, we saw that here.
We saw that here.
In New Orleans, haunts didn't get COVID guidelines until like 3 weeks before.
Wow.
And then they had their lawyers, you know, at the door, basically at the governor's office saying, hey,
wait a minute. These are impossible.
We can't do 25% only. We're this huge
or 25 giant. People only is what it was for per building. I think is what it was.
Yeah,
it was even by my standards. And I take this COVID stuff very, very seriously.
Right.
Even by my standards, it was kind of insane.
Yeah.
And impractical.
Yeah. Because like 13th Gate is gigantic.
It's like 200,000 square feet.
Yeah. You know? 25 people in a 200,000 square foot.
No.
Yeah.
Now, not only can you not transmit COVID that way, you can't transmit, you know, communication that way.
Right.
Right.
No. I mean, yeah, it was crazy. I don't know how big the 13th Gate actually is, but it's a ginormous building. It takes up like a whole city block. No. It was silly stuff. And that's just it. We weren't thought of. And like what had happened in Illinois was haunts got canceled basically by the state, like at the absolute last second. In fact, some haunts have been open week or two before the state came down and issued its regulations. So we were not thought of. We weren't given regulations. We're such a unique and such a small industry. Haunt owners were just scrambling for any idea of what to do.
Right. But on the positive side, something that I've seen positive come out of this year is that people are more used to virtual experiences. And so I think that gives a lot of opportunities for haunts going forward to think about how you can incorporate, you know, virtual meetups or virtual walkthroughs to try to do things.
Yeah. I've got to agree with you, Crystal. It seems like an extra revenue stream even after things get back to normal at whatever normal is.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like we're talking about, we have a weekly craft group we have.
Right.
And we used to meet in person every week, but now due to everything going on, the global, international global bastard, as I've taken to calling it, we meet virtually, but we were talking about it. Said, well, when our coffee shop does open up and we're able to meet in person again, we're still going to bring a MacBook or a tablet or something and keep the virtual component going so the people that have joined our group from far-flung places can continue to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had talked about previously, me and Jim on different podcasts about from where COVID's hit, and people are going to have to start thinking outside the box more or less and coming up with different ideas and different revenue streams. You guys are down around the New Orleans area and stuff like that. Have you heard of anything different besides the virtual, like any new ideas or something that's been creative that's kind of sprung out that you've heard of?
City Park did a drive-through trick-or-treat.
Yeah, which was actually pretty cool.
I had friends that have little kids, and they took them to it, and they enjoyed that.
No, we didn't unleash any hellspawn. It was our friends.
Yeah. So I think that that they should continue that in the future, just because it was a good experience for them.
Yeah.
That's, I haven't heard of a lot locally, though. I mean, Haunts just decided to open.
Yeah, like, in terms of, like, creative business things I've seen done, I've seen more from the elsewhere in the country. Mm-hmm. We've been seeing a lot more virtual haunts opening up. That's actually been a really cool thing. The rise of virtual escape rooms, which is weird because escape rooms started out as virtual experiences and then became physical ones, and now moving back to virtual because everything is just a cycle. It's the circle of life. Hold the lion in the air and call it a day.
Yeah, and we have a friend of our podcast who there's up in New Jersey, they were supposed to do a virtual ghost hunt at their haunt.
And they canceled due to weather because the trail got too soppy to even do a virtual one on, which sucks. But yeah, we saw virtual ghost hunts taking place. We saw, one thing we've noticed a lot of, and this was something that was happening here, was haunts offering a more, I want to say like a boutique experience. Yeah. Just you and your group, you show up at this time, you go through the haunt by yourself, this more, you know, personalized boutique experience, which I think is a neat idea because, you know, it's like what's past VIP coming down the road. You know, we got to find more ways to do price differentials on these haunts when offering tickets. And that's a potential avenue, not just in COVID times, but in normal, in quote unquote, normal times.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, you guys have made a lot of great points. Excuse me. After being in the haunt business for so long, you know, you get tired of seeing the same old, even when the haunts redo, you know, a portion of their haunt every year, people are always wanting something more and new and different. And, you know, COVID has spurred these virtual experiences that some people want to experience from the comfort of their own home.
And it also breaks the geography limitations. Right now, if you're a haunt owner, you probably don't have many customers beyond about a 50-mile radius of your haunt.
Right.
And so if you're in the middle of BFE and 50 miles means not many people, that's your audience. A virtual experience can reach anywhere in the world. We played virtual escape rooms from England.
Yeah.
You know, for example, we've been all over the world with our virtual experiences. And that's, I think, a great idea for haunts. Another reason to do it.
Yeah, I wish more haunts would do it because I would love to get virtual tours of some that we aren't going to be able to get to for a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would ruin the experience if we were able to get there in person.
No.
Because in person's a completely different than the virtual.
Absolutely.
So I don't think you're giving anything away.
No, and I agree with that, yeah.
And I have to agree with you as well. I mean, there's quite a few haunts that, you know, are on my bucket list that I probably never will get to. And again, I would love to experience something like that because it is still going to be different from whether or not you're in person. I mean,
yeah. And like one of the ones I think of immediately is the Headless Horseman.
Right.
We're down in New Orleans. It's probably gonna be a long time before we can make it there. I so desperately want to see it. I keep seeing all the documentaries, the giant props and everything. I just go, ooh,
yeah,
so pretty. And I keep wanting to see it. So a virtual tour might, you know, tickle that fancy for a minute, but I know the minute I get actually physically next to it, it's going to still be a very different experience.
So what's your top bucket list one, Jim and Donnie?
Oh my gosh.
I haven't been to many outside of Ohio, so I'm open for Netherworld and all of them. I want to go to all of them.
Netherworld's really good. I'll recommend Netherworld.
Yeah.
Not only have I been in Netherworld, I've worked Netherworld.
Yeah. I want to go to Erebus too. I've heard that one was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Erebus is on my list, and actually it's
on ours.
It's only probably about a 4-hour drive for me.
Mm-hmm.
We missed out. My wife and I were talking about it this year, but we just didn't coincide to go up there this year. Headless Horseman is definitely on my list. I've watched all the America haunts and I love what they do there.
Yeah.
What's another one that I would, that I really, really want to go. Now you guys put me on the spot because I know.
No, it's all right. That was her. Don't blame me.
No, there's a ton of them in my mind, and you know, every one of them's like, "Damn, I'm not going to let you know what I am right now." But there are many. Erebus.
You can edit
definitely.
In later.
Edit in later. Just fix it in post. Just like we fix everything in post, we fix nothing in post.
Right.
I very rarely fix anything in post.
We just wing it.
Us too.
I would want to touch back on this virtual reality. This popped into my head as you guys were talking. Do you see something in the future to where haunted houses start building their rooms to where they can, like, part of it's built for the virtual reality, part of it's built for the in-person, to where the cameras are pointed to certain angles to where they only get certain amount of scares, but then that's all they see on the cameras. But if you go in person, there's like a different side of the room to where
I think one of the things you're going to have to do is the haunt experience has to be different in VR, maybe not more or less, but it's going to be different. And one of the things I'm talking about is, like, think about, if you ever used Google Street View, is a good example, and you've used it to roam through like Times Square or something, and you know, you just imagine that car driving through, that's something similar is going to have to happen, where you have a 360 camera going through the haunt, experiencing the scares and the noise and capturing the noise and everything. You really have to, in that type of environment, focus on one thing at a time. So where maybe a room would have two actors each doing their own thing, that wouldn't work so well in a virtual environment, where you might want to really just focus on that one better, one good scare and so forth. I think things like that, I think, would be more your change rather than hiding certain parts of the room. It'd be more about focusing the experience into what you can deliver in a VR. And because you can take in so much more sensory information without a VR helmet on, basically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I got to say, VR is fun.
Oh, it is.
Aside from the fact that I have a VR for my PS4, you know, at Transworld a couple of times, they've got the VR experiences there, which were really neat. And it's funny, if you're on the outside looking in, watching people wandering through this area aimlessly, and then you see them bump into stuff and things like that, and it's all part of their experience. But to see a person just wandering around like that is kind of amusing, actually.
No. Well, I think I would want two different things from a VR experience in a haunt. A, just a walkthrough. You know, don't necessarily, you know, try to pan and change it. But just a walkthrough with the actors so that they're doing their thing. And if they get in the camera view, they get in the camera view. So it'd be like a little promo, but it'd be like the full thing.
Right.
And the other thing is that after COVID's over and people are able to go to haunts, keep those cameras in place, but turn them on to like a live stream type thing. So that you can point it at the customer so that you can see people being scared as they're going through.
Which is fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And that reminds me of one haunt. I think it was 13th Gate actually did a thing for a while. They stopped doing it where you could pay like a microtransaction cost to activate a prop in the haunt and scare customers and then watch the scare that you got through the phone app. It was weird and interesting. I don't think it had a lot of success, but, you know, it opens up possibilities.
Yeah.
And I think that's something
that kind of merges the two worlds together.
Exactly. And it's something that could work better today. I think this was years ago.
Right.
The technology is definitely better. I mean, come on. Facebook is offering, what is it, a $300 VR set now for PCs. It's absolutely bananas how much the tech has come down in price and up in quality.
Right.
I mean, we had to win our PlayStation 4 VR. We won that from Taco Bell.
Hey,
Ellie turned the code and said, "It says I won something. It says you win a PSVR." And like, we're looking at her like, "The hell? That's the grand prize!"
Nice.
That's great.
Yeah.
We didn't have a PlayStation. We had to get a PlayStation.
That's where they got you.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. That's the scam.
The PlayStation doesn't cost as much as the VR set.
No, it did not.
Oh, wow.
We had a lot of fun with it, though.
I bet you did. I played a couple of games on my VR. I've got Vader Immortal, which I haven't tried yet, but being a big Darth Vader fan, but I've got Until Dawn, Rush of Blood.
Yes.
Yeah.
We played that, yeah.
And it's just flat out creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if you don't like clowns.
You know,
Speaking of clowns, we did
a virtual experience at the 13th Gate. I'm trying to remember what it was, but they sat you in a chair. You were confined to a chair the whole time. And I think if they had done more storytelling with it and more action with it, it was more about, look, you're in a creepy mental hospital or something like that. I can't remember what it was. And it was all right. It showed the promise of the tech to tell VR stories in haunts and horror. Mm-hmm. But I think that's like Gen 1. We need to be on like Gen 4. You know, we need to be
right
a little further down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't particularly enjoy the experience. I'm glad that I tried it out.
I didn't particularly enjoy it, but I really did like the potential I saw in it.
Yeah.
Because there were moments in it, like where the wheelchair, you're supposedly in a wheelchair and the wheelchair is moving and you feel that little bit of movement, even though you're obviously just perfectly stationary.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that and things like that.
Yeah. I wonder if you could pay for a VR experience. This is obviously after COVID. And sure, they sit you in the wheelchair, but they actually do move you. And then whenever you take the little headset off, there's actually characters in front of you. So
that would be nice.
Yeah, that's a post-COVID thing, but that'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
Well, you know, I mean.
And they don't actually have to move you even. They could just like drop a wall.
Yeah.
Right.
We're good for that.
Gravity. You
know, I've always found that the last ride coffin experience is always unique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And why not expound on that more and do something like you're talking about with the wheelchair? I mean, it's something that can, I mean, the technology's there, it can be done.
Yeah. I think, the haunt industry is really weird to me because on one hand, we are some of the most tech savvy people on the planet. I think we have more Raspberry Pis per haunter than any other industry outside of Silicon Valley. You know, we are super tech savvy in some ways, but in some ways we're super not tech savvy and we're very resistant to technology at the same time. I mean, we've been very slow to adopt social media, for example, as a major platform to communicate with and to use other than just an advertising medium. It's kind of weird.
Well, and I think that we as an industry, we're probably one of the least prepared for this kind of world that we're in now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because of the hesitancy to change and to incorporate, you know, social media and just computers in general,
mm-hmm.
you know, outside of running scares and props. So.
Yeah, I mean, haunters are amazing at finding ways to connect props, connect sensors, working their actual physical haunt tech all the way. I swear to God, I've seen haunts with controller systems that just make my jaw drop with the wiring and the cabling and the number of Arduino boards hooked up. It's absolutely bananas. And then you look at their website, and their website's straight from 1995, and their Facebook page hasn't been updated in 2 months. It's like, you're not technophobes. It's obvious you love technology.
You know, and I see it every day because, you know, certain prop builders use, you know, pneumatics, valves, cylinders, things like that. My shoot job, I actually work for a fluid power company.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I see these little cylinders and all the valves that are run for the pneumatics. I see them all the time. And I sit there and think about it. I said, okay, this could go on a prop here. Mm-hmm. And you could use this to move a prop over here. And it's just, when I see these parts, it clicks in my head. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have been hogging most of the questions here, so I'm going to give Donnie a chance to talk.
Oh, no, it's Donnie, all good, man.
It's you all know, you now, man.
You know my spiel when there's haunters on the screen. I'll shut up and listen. I'm learning. But no, I just want to like switch gears just a little bit. And the reason I reached out to you guys is because we've interviewed wrestlers. We've interviewed referees, managers, promoters, haunt owners, haunt actors, you know, prop makers. We've interviewed all this different type of people, but we've never really interviewed the podcast people that are involved with these genres and stuff. So that's why I want to start doing like collaborating with other haunt podcasts, collaborating with other wrestling podcasts, you know, just let people get to know the podcasters out there instead of just the guests that we bring on. So that's why I decided to start reaching out to people. And I reached out to you guys, and you guys were gracious enough to come on to the show. And, you know, your guys' podcast is Haunt Weekly. And you basically, your moniker is it's a weekly podcast about the haunted attraction industry from the smallest home haunt to the largest event haunt. Yeah. So, give us a little bit of your background, how you guys got started on haunting, what brought up the idea of the podcast, and just let everybody, you know a little bit about you guys instead of the other way around.
Go ahead.
The podcast, in part, got started because I was looking for one that was regularly scheduled, and this was years ago.
I think a lot's changed. Yeah, 260-odd episodes. Let's be honest.
Exactly. And I got frustrated because I would find some, and they would be great, but then it would be months and months before another episode came out.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was working a job where I could listen to podcasts all day long because, you know, one headphone in the ear and my fingers on a keyboard, I'm good to go. So that started us talking about
making a podcast. The name actually came from, we owned the domain for it.
Yeah.
Eons ago, we bought it because the original plan was we were going to do one of those like Garage of Evil style haunt project channels.
Okay.
We bought the domain Haunt Weekly, and we sat on it, and we sort of got out of video content around the time we bought it, because we were doing garbage horror at that time too. And we just realized video content takes a lot of time and work, and I'm not as good of a video editor as I thought myself to be. And we kind of retreated on it a little bit. And so we started switching. So we talked later about making audio content, and I've done podcasts before. I've done podcasts in my day job. I did the Copyright 2.0 show for, I think we've now gone for more episodes than that went.
Yeah.
I think because that went about 250 episodes. So I knew a fair amount about audio editing and podcasting, but so we just decided to turn it into a podcast. Now, as far as our history as haunters, I think we both have always been haunters.
But the other thing about podcasting is that we always talk about the haunted house industry, about our haunt, about props, about other haunts. So why not record it for people?
Oh yeah, that was true. Like we have these conversations anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
Why not just stick, we got this H4N recorder. Why not just stick it in the room and turn it on and see what happens?
Exactly.
I'm on the other side of it. And that's literally the genesis of Haunt Weekly itself. Good point. Thank you for correcting me. But as far as we go, we both have always been haunters. We grew up not wanting to trick or treat, more wanting to scare people that were trick or treating. The instinct was in our blood from a young age. We met in the year 2000, and we actually one of the first things we did together was work a haunted house.
Yeah,
we worked at a Boy Scout haunted house in Columbia, South Carolina. Dear God, I'm surprised no one got hurt at that. I look back on it in 2020, absolutely mortified at the crap we pulled there.
Yeah. Okay.
There should have been like so many lawsuits, let's just be honest. And I should have been buried in lawsuit paperwork, for being honest. But yeah, we moved to New Orleans in 2002. And here we got involved with a local haunt called Chamber of Horrors. But after we got to our new place, we wanted to do our own haunt. We always wanted to build our own stuff and do our own thing.
Yeah.
So we launched first season was after Hurricane Katrina, I should say.
Yeah.
2005, nothing was going on in New Orleans. Right. Post Katrina, New Orleans, there was Halloween's coming up. I couldn't remember, Katrina happened late August and the effects were going on through early September. So October comes around, there's nothing going on, but our neighborhood was relatively unimpacted. We were very lucky.
Right.
We were across the river from the worst of it. And so we see that there's no Halloween activities going on at all. And we sort of look at each other and go, we got a front yard and we've got some basic building knowledge. Why don't we do it?
Yeah.
And so we built our first drop panel. We built a structure to encompass the front yard. It was not a very large front yard, to be honest. Right.
And since none of the stores had received their Halloween inventory, we actually were driving 4 hours every weekend. Oh, wow. To go and buy stuff to bring back to New Orleans.
Yeah, the nearest actual Spirit was, I believe, in Alexandria at that time.
Yeah.
So we had to go for anything like Halloween lights, fog juice, things like that. We had to go that far, and good luck getting actual lumber supplies.
Yeah.
Not only were they not affordable, they were nowhere to be found. Like right now they're not affordable because we had Hurricane Zeta. There's
and all the others, all the storms that hit the rest of,
near us at the Gulf Coast, but they were nowhere to be found. And so what we did is we said, well, what can we buy? Well, we can buy 2x2s and tarp.
No.
And that's what we did. We built our structure out of that. It lasted exactly one night. Yep. It would not have made it a minute longer. Not a chance. But we put about 400 people through that very first year. We just had flyers and word got out about us in the neighborhood. And we had the absolute best marketing you could have. Four teenage boys on bicycles running around, knocking on every door they could find to tell you this was going on. That was awesome.
All right.
So we did that. And then when we got to this place, we came with this garage, which we're currently in the video version. We just turned this into a haunted house, and we've been doing it ever since. And out of this garage,
we actually bought this house because it had a garage big enough for a haunted house.
Yeah, it met the requirements. Yeah. It had a big enough garage. It has a 650 square foot garage. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It had, I mean, the house is only 1,100 square feet, but no one gives a crap about that. No one gives a crap.
We just live in there.
We just live in there and hang out and watch TV in there. Nothing important happens there. Some sleek, maybe, you know. But so, yeah, we bought it for the garage, and because it was near a school.
Right.
It was about, exactly. It's about a mile from the local area high school and right on the same road even. So it was perfect. And we bought it, and we've been operating out of it every year. Now, we've been closed the last 2 years. Because last year it was the city of New Orleans, in their infinite wisdom, decided to thank us for running the haunt by paving our road and then having the road completely destroyed right when we would be open.
Oh, geez.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, it was. Right. Yeah, if the contractors had kept the schedule, it would have been done by June.
Yeah, by May and June. Yeah, easily. Yeah.
But it was done by January of the next year.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
We were without reliable road surface for probably about a year there, honestly.
Yeah.
And then this year, of course, the ongoing global bastard, but also we got hit by Hurricane Zeta, which nixed our hurricane, which nixed our trick-or-treating plans.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we had actually said, okay, well, we haven't done trick-or-treating since our very first year.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have some exciting things to do there. We'll buy a deer stand so that we can slide candy down a kid's
down a candy chute. We had all these big ideas, and there's a deer stand in the front yard. It's gonna be a Christmas tree later today. Shut up. It's gonna be fine. Part of our Christmas display, part of our holiday displays we're doing. Shut up. But we had all these big ideas, and then Hurricane Zeta hit. And when it first was coming, it's like, it's just going to be a tropical. It's going to be nothing. It's going to be nothing.
Yeah.
And then it hits us as a Category 3.
Yeah.
And we lose power for 5 days there, basically. And
yeah. So it's like, well,
that's it for that. Yep. And considering like you couldn't even get through our neighborhood because half the roads were blocked due to giant trees being down.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It wasn't safe to invite outsiders to trick or treat.
Yeah.
So it's been a rough luck 2 years for us, but we're looking forward. Like I said, the haunt's been done since January 2019. Mm-hmm. So we're ready. Those that were at HauntCon in 2019 and came on the tour got to see it, and they're the only ones.
It 650 square feet. That's a huge garage.
Yeah.
It's a weird because it's only got one garage, like one, it's a single car garage in terms of garage doors, right. But it has the other side. So it's designed like a workshop rather than a traditional garage. Actually, it has one garage door, one regular exterior door, which there is no door. And it goes back to the netherworld. It's a huge building for what it is. We're able to fit 5 rooms, and it pretty much is what we do, a 5-room haunt.
Wow. You know,
each room a little bit over 100 square feet. And it's just worked.
Every year we get, it's still going. Yeah.
You're not even at the halfway point, lady. That has happened multiple times.
Yeah.
They get to the turn for that back hallway and they're not even like, it's still going. Like, yeah, you're not even at the halfway point. Halfway point is this hallway. Once you clear it, you're halfway done.
That is really great that you've got that much room to work with. I mean, I'm jealous. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a one car garage, and it's got some haunted, some Halloween props. It's got my wrestling ring, and that's about it. I can't fit nothing else.
Well, it's got a wrestling ring, that's cool.
Well, it's not put together though; it's in all in pieces.
I'm saying it's got to be pretty big if it can hold a wrestling ring. Those are like 12 by 12, aren't they?
Ours is 18. Yeah, 18 by 18. I wish that'd be great.
18 by 18 standard. 15 by 15. I listened to Jim Cornette. He told us about the size of wrestling rings. Well, yep. we did listen to him, yeah. But
speaking of, I see you got the ECW shirt on, so I take it you guys are wrestling fans as well.
Oh, and, yeah. And I think I recognize Crystal's shirt. Mm-hmm. That's Abaddon.
Yep.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is.
Yep.
From AEW.
Yes.
Yep. My history with wrestling is weird. I was a wrestling fan as a kid from, like, I would say 85. I'm 40, so I was born in 1980. So give you your chronologue here. From like 85 through about 90-ish, I was a wrestling fan. And as a kid, and that was during the peak Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior era, mm-hmm. all that type of Honky Tonk Man. Ludicrous, ridiculous stuff. And it all got started because my dad accidentally met the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, at an airport in North Carolina and was curious to see if he was wrestling that week, not realizing that he was probably going to either a house show or it was probably that what aired like on Superstars that week was probably taped months ago at that point in the 80s. So, but neither here nor there, I started watching it and kind of fell out of it. I kind of outgrew it. That was during a very kiddie phase of wrestling. And, you know, I kind of fell out of it. And then I got back into it in the mid 90s, just in time for 1995 wrestling history. Basically, the worst year in wrestling history was about when I picked it back up and ran from there until the early 2000s, right as ECW and WCW folded.
Mm-hmm.
And then picked it back up again more recently with AEW and everything else. So I've got a lot of gaps in my wrestling knowledge, but yeah, I've been an off and on wrestling fan since for 35 years, basically.
Yeah. And I'm kind of the same way. I watched it a lot as a kid and my mom loves wrestling. Like she's barely taken breaks.
Yeah, she should be on this part of the podcast, honestly. She should fill in for us.
But I mean, I remember as a kid, the first time The Undertaker came out, and that was the coolest shit ever.
Oh, yeah. 1990, yeah.
You know. 1990. And then the WrestleMania that we got to go to, he actually made an appearance.
Oh, wow.
And the entire arena, the Superdome went dark, and you heard the gongs, and it was like, you know, I'm a kid all over again. It was wonderful.
Yeah, we were in the nosebleed seats for WrestleMania 34, and and even then, it's like...
Yeah, because I just, you know,
I don't care if
it's
like
a special place in my heart, but I tend to gravitate towards the more horror themed wrestlers, you know, mm-hmm. like The Undertaker, like Abaddon right now. Like when she came out the first time on AEW Dark, I was super excited because here was a woman playing a horror character doing the weird movements that I see in haunted houses on a wrestle stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, she's my girl. And I was really sad to hear that she was hurt recently. I'm glad to hear that she's doing better. She started posting on social media again, but yeah. And other ones would be like The Fiend mm-hmm. and The Demon for Finn Balor. I like both of Finn Balor's character, him as a wrestler and The Demon. So,
okay. Yeah, I mean, And for me, I discovered ECW sometime around 1995, and this was back mm-hmm. in the era where they were not nationally syndicated in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so what happened is one of my friends spent weekends with his mom. His parents were divorced, and his mom moved to somewhere in BFE, South Carolina. I think it was St. Andrews,
St. Matthews,
some goddamn saint. Yes, I get the irony. I moved out there to some town you'll never hear of again. But they got different cable system. And so he came back to class one day telling us, dude, at 2 a.m., I was watching Sports South, and then the channel went off, and then on came this wrestling promotion. That was absolutely bananas. It made Daddy look like a pillow fight. You have to see it. And so we all went and spent the weekend with him and his mom just to watch this weird wackadoodle wrestling program. And yeah, after that, we were tape trading ECW every week. And I followed. I'm actually in the process now of rewatching every episode of ECW Hardcore TV from 93 through 2000.
Oh, wow.
I'm currently in the mid 1995, actually. Thank you, WWE Network, for something. So, but yeah, no, that was an incredible experience. And I remember what I liked about it wasn't necessarily just the blood and the violence and all that. I liked that it felt more real.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it felt dirty. It felt grungy. It felt more like an actual fight. It felt more, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, And you look at it and you look at what WCW and WWF are putting out at that time. This was pre-Attitude Era and pre-NWO especially. Mm-hmm. This felt, you know, actually serious, unlike the more cartoony. Because that was the year of King, 95 was the year of King Mabel, for the love of God. And Diesel was world champion in WWF. You know, it was not a good time.
And were valid points.
There have been, you know, we've had several wrestlers on our show over the past almost year and a half. And we try to, you know, we don't always get one that's themed exactly the way we want, but they're still fascinating to talk to nonetheless. We've had recently Mojo McQueen, who wrestles up here in the Ohio Midwest area.
Mm-hmm.
We've had... I don't know if you guys remember a wrestler named Dean Ambrose, a.k.a. John Moxley.
Yeah, we might know Gian. You got to say it right.
his trainer runs a small promotion in the town I live in called Future Great Wrestling. And up until recently, my daughter was training underneath him.
Nice.
Mm. Very nice.
We've had Madman Fulton from Impact on, mm-hmm. Thunder Rosa,
mm-hmm.
who else? Brutal Bob Evans we just had on a recent show. Mm-hmm. God, who? Sammy? No, we haven't had Sammy Callahan on. We tried to get Sammy Callahan on.
We will.
We will. I've interviewed in the past for Big Scary Show. I've interviewed Rosemary from Impact.
Mm-hmm.
Who
I love Rosemary's work a lot. Yeah, I love
that character.
Mm-hmm.
We try to mix it up. We get you horror, you know, we got horror people. We get the haunt people, but the next episode that'll be out before this one. Have you ever seen the movie Terrifier?
Yes, we have. Okay, never mind. What I was gonna say was the big moment's a spoiler too. I should really end up on that.
We were going to be airing a podcast with Art the Clown on Monday.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, they're working. I think they aren't they working the crowdfund Terrifier too?
Yeah.
It should be coming out next year. Yep.
Yeah, I remember seeing the crowdfunding alerts for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I get alerts about horror movies that are being undergoing crowdfunding efforts, and we watched Terrifier too, and yeah, I remember that. I enjoyed it. I mean, like yeah, I said, I don't want to talk about it because what I want to talk about is right, a definite spoiler, so I'm going to keep my mouth shut instead.
Yeah, we touched on that with the interview with him. It's coming out, and yeah, according to him, Terrifier 2 is even more gory and gruesome than the first one, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and without spoiling anything, like you said, the kill, my new favorite kill scene is in Terrifier.
So. Yes, that will work with that. That's one of my favorite kill sequences too. Though after watching the killer pinata, there were some inventive. There was at least one extremely inventive one in that. Leave there.
Yeah, don't watch it with kids.
Don't watch it with kids in the room, please. Literally.
Right. So. I mean, if you two had to choose one favorite wrestler above all others, your absolutely favorite one you always want to watch, who would it be?
Oof. That is a big ask. Oof.
Okay, so just his presence and everything, my mind automatically goes to Undertaker, but I like what a lot of people have done. But he's just been my favorite forever. Okay. That's why.
I have two separate instincts there. One is to say Matt Hardy, because he's gone through so many iterations and so many versions, and you can find so many different things he's done.
Right.
That you even, oddly enough, even just watching one wrestler, you're not seriously limiting yourself in terms of the types of matches and the types of entertainment you get.
No.
But I think my favorite wrestler, the one I've kind of glommed onto over the years, has always been Tommy Dreamer, oddly enough.
Okay.
Because even though, you know, the whole thing about Tommy Dreamer is, if you, especially when you go back and watch like his 93 era ECW, he shows up, he's just a pretty boy wearing suspenders for some freaking reason. No one can explain to me why he thought purple glittery suspenders were a good look. I'll never know, in front of a Philly crowd. Yeah. But he's the brawler type. He's the everyman. And he's kind of like doing, he was doing then what kind of like John Moxley is doing now, that everyman gimmick, but he's always done it, and he's always wrestled safe, he's always wrestled smart. There's nothing in his catalog that's bad, and yes, he usually loses, but that just makes it that much more great when he gets to come up and it's like the chair shot heard around the world against Raven and moments like that. Okay. It leads to such peak moments. He understood that he had to lose in order to get the high of that victory.
Right.
I love the stories he told through his character.
And I'm going to answer for Ellie. She's not
here. Okay.
But Orange Cassidy, because we actually have a lot of respect for Orange Cassidy, because he can look like he's low energy and just be athletic as fuck, you know.
And one of the things about Orange Cassidy, and even if you don't like the comedy style of wrestling, you have to understand that it is harder to look like you're doing this lazily and do what he does than it is to just do it. You know, he's handicapping himself and still putting on these stellar performances. And a lot of the work he's done lately in AEW with like the Mimosa Mayhem match and things like that, where he's just been doing it straight, it has been incredible.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So.
Nice. I don't know if you, are you familiar with Lufisto?
No.
She's a Canadian wrestler, and she, the easiest way to compare Lufisto is she's a female Tommy Dreamer.
Now I do need to know her.
Yes, she is. She's all in, and we interviewed her about 10 or 12 episodes ago. And she is just, they call her the Wounded Owl Lufisto, and she just gets right in the middle of it and gets hardcore.
Mm-hmm. She's big on intergender matches too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Very nice.
Which, you know, yeah, I get that intergender wrestling is controversial in a lot of circles, but I don't see why, especially when you got women that can definitely kick my ass.
Right.
Without any question.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I'm not going against Nia Jax or Nyla Rose. You can kiss my ass. I'm backing down from that fight.
Yeah.
They come at me. No, please, please don't hit me. I'll be cowering in a corner hiding.
I wouldn't get in on that, especially Nia Jax. She's probably as big as I am. So it's
Nia
Jax
will wreck you.
I'm 6'4", man.
And going back, even like China, like back when she won the Intercontinental title,
right?
Nobody had any question China could go toe to toe with anybody that she was going toe to toe with.
No,
she was a wrecking machine. And so, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the issues with intergender wrestling comes from what happened back in the darker times when they would get these tiny little model-esque girls and put them up against, you know, much larger people, men and women, and they'd win in unbelievable scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got all these women wrestlers that are just absolutely kick ass. And I wouldn't, I'm not throwing punches with Abaddon.
No.
I like my teeth. teeth are fine where they are, man.
If you ever get the opportunity, go onto YouTube and look up Lufisto. She's got a YouTube channel. And she posts free matches all the time on it.
I will do that.
Cool.
Well, that sounds great.
She's a force to be reckoned with. She's, they call her a pog, but she's solid. I mean, she's about 5'2". Donnie, I think she's
about 5'2".
Yeah. And she's solid. I mean, she's thick.
and she mixes it up. She's amazing in the ring.
Well, I mean, really Taz is only like what, 5 foot dead?
Right.
And no one's, I'm not fighting Taz either. Kiss my
ass. No, he's built like a little tank. I may have a whole
foot on him, but no. He'll throw me through the goddamn wall. I know he's done it. he famously threw a at the House of Hardcore. He threw a trainee through a wall.
Yeah.
So no. Taz, I know he's got that neck injury and doesn't wrestle anymore. I'm still not taking him on.
He'll still mess you up if he has to.
If it comes to it, he will wreck me in that move without even breaking a sweat. Yeah. He won't need that towel on his head. He'll be.
Yeah, well, you said when he asked you who your favorite wrestler was, that was a big ask, and I'm going to have a bigger ask now, and it's something that we ask every guest we have on every month. We kind of put them on the spot. So the question is, you are the main killer in your own horror film. What is your guys' go-to kill?
Go-to kill. That is a very difficult question. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
See, if I'm the villain in a horror movie and I get my go-to kill.
Are we constricted by human, by being human? Nope.
Mojo McQueen's answer was he threw somebody off a building and before they hit the bottom, he was in a semi truck and ran them over. So, I mean, it could be a
hard answer to compete with.
Right. Yeah. It could be as fantasy as you want it to be.
You know, and this comes from both my love of wrestling and horror. For me, I've always loved it because when we've noticed this in our haunt, we've noticed this in wrestling, notice this everywhere, is that people don't look up a lot, yeah. Right? Like you go through our haunt, we oftentimes stick stuff in the ceiling, we'll put scares in the ceiling because no one's looking there. We can mess with them. We have in this design, we have a couple scares in the ceiling this year. So my first thought is I want to drop down from some height a la, you know, Matt Hardy or a la, you know, any number of killers from history and with a knife or some sharp object and take him out that way because no one's going to see it coming from out of nowhere, as the wrestling fans say. And then slink back off in the darkness, do it Batman style for me because I'm all about the silent and the quick kill that you don't see coming because that's what makes people scared is that you're never going to know when it's going to happen element of it.
Yeah. So picture it. No.
Picture it. Sicily, 1938. She's been full Golden Girls mode. Yeah.
So the victim's in a building and they start seeing something out of the corner of their eye. And so they start to walk faster. They start to run and they start to scream. But as they scream, they lose their voice. Their voice gets quieter and quieter and it completely goes away. And then out of the darkness, these tentacle things come around and wrap them entirely up from their toes to their head and squeeze the life slowly out of them. And they know that they can't scream for help while they're dying.
You scare me.
I scare a lot of
people. I'm gonna rest the podcast over here if that's okay.
You have thought that out, and it's like, no. Wow.
No, I'm pretty sure she did just make that up, like literally on the spot here and now.
Yeah, that's why I let him go first, so I could have like a few extra seconds.
Okay. I am like Mr. Cliche. I'm Mr. Batman. Also, I was thinking like Repo the Genetic Opera, the scene where he catches the guy by dropping down, but he has his angle, so as he comes down, he's pulling the guy up like a snare trap,
yeah.
So right. He can slice his throat. And do things.
Well, like. I mean, the thing is that, okay, so whenever we work on building scares, that's kind of how my mind works. Is like, you ask me how I would kill someone, I've got to set the whole scene. So that's what I do with the haunt, is that the whole scene has to be set and it has to be right so that the fear is there just from being in that situation. So it's a complete package for me. Okay. It's not just I want to have knives for my hands, you know?
No, but I love your thought process, Crystal. I really do. I mean,
no.
You came off the, you did it on the fly, but it was an all encompassing idea. It wasn't just knives on hands and stuff. You really thought about it. And I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, and I also like Jonathan's too. I envisioned like a Michael Myers where he like slowly lowers himself down with one arm, uh-huh. and he just like sticks the knife in the top of their head, and then he like slowly pulls himself back
that
up.
That comes from my love of playing with verticality. When I design scares, I love playing with verticality. I love being below and above people, mm-hmm. and messing with them, because I've noticed like when we go for walks, like the big dog that comes and barks at us never startles me.
Right.
Because I can see him. He's at a height I can see. But when that little fucker comes up and yaps at us from like way down here, like 2 inches from us, that makes me jump out of my skin every time. Mm-hmm. So verticality is a big thing for me with scares.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, that's one thing when I was training actors that I always focus on. I said, scare them from above or below. They're expecting you to come from the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is why we built things in the ceiling of this. This is why we do crazy stuff like that. And it's because it works. People, like you said, people are like eye height, whatever that is. People are looking.
Yeah. And we don't do a lot of from the ground scares in our haunt just because there's not enough room to keep the actors safe.
Yeah. We have a slab garage, so there's not really ways to get much lower on the side. With retreat spaces and everything, but maybe we'll work on something. There's got to be even if it's just a prop, we got to be able to do something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can build a prop for certainly.
Yeah. I'll think about that.
Yeah. We'll think about that.
There's a haunt up here in Ohio that I've worked with and I've trained and consulted with them over the years. And one of the things I like that they did is they put in a laser swamp at about 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people underneath that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that was a great innovation. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that. I think, I can't remember which haunt locally did that, but I know one did something similar here. And it was definitely different because we're so used to the laser swamp not being anything other than just, oh, cool, I can't see where I'm going moment, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I think Rise is the one that hid the actor in it. First, because 13th Gates had a laser swamp longer.
The 13th Gates, the one that did the claustrophobia tunnel change out that we love so much.
Yeah, but they also have the swamp.
Yeah, they do have a swamp. Yeah, 13th Gate is a little bit of everything, but the claustrophobia gag was 1 year. They kind of, I think they might have accidentally stumbled into greatness.
Yeah, and this is our favorite thing, I think, that they've ever done.
Yeah, because
hands down.
They had the claustrophobia tunnels, the big inflatable tunnels. You go into one, you come out, there's nothing on the other side. It's just a means of getting you through a dark hallway and slowing you down.
Right.
They had like 3 or 4 of them, or maybe more.
I think it was just 2 or 3.
But it was enough so that you're like, oh, claustrophobia tunnel, here we go again.
Yeah.
Gee golly Willikers. So we get to one, come out, the claustrophobia.
And the last one itself was shorter.
Yeah. Well, it started out full height and then it cut down to shorter very abruptly. And then you're in this hellscape where on top of these claustrophobia tunnels are limbs and actors crawling bloody, looking like they've had their limbs severed. And you're just in this absolute hellscape. And I thought, what did I walk into?
Yeah, it really broke your brain because they set you up with that expectation that you're just going to be coming into another room.
Yeah.
And then you are more quickly into this just scene of horror.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to work for the Dent Schoolhouse amongst other places, and mm-hmm. we had claustrophobia tunnels. And of course everybody up here just called them the vagina. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of claustrophobic tunnels. I understand how sometimes they're necessary.
Right.
Yeah, I pretty much don't like them. Like most of the time, it's just a necessary thing that I find that people couldn't think of anything else to do in that space.
Right.
Well, I know in like mortuaries, sometimes it's because they're a historic building, they can't make modifications. They have a hallway they literally can't do anything with.
Right.
So they can stick a temporary claustrophobia tunnel in it, and at least it slows you down and gives you something.
Yeah.
And I understand that completely. And sometimes even the best designed haunts, you have spaces you just can't do anything with.
Right.
I understand. Right. That happens. Mm-hmm. That's life. But yeah, there are some haunts I've been to that clearly just seem to think those are the best thing in the world. And it's like every scene is separated by a claustrophobia tunnel. And yeah. It's like, yeah, no.
Yeah. But I mean, that was really the first time that we had seen expectations played with like that in a haunted house.
Okay.
And this was many years ago.
Yeah. So I think they've gotten rid of claustrophobia tunnels full stop there, actually.
Yeah. We did something similar. We actually changed that idea for our haunt a little later, because most of the area haunts had closet scenes. Mm-hmm. So we put in a short closet, and whenever you came out the other side, you were faced with limbs and severed heads and all this stuff basically right here, you know. Okay. Like a foot away from your face.
Yeah, because like that was around the time, like you said, every haunt had like this giant 10, 20 foot closet tunnel. It's like, yeah, we'll just have a 3 foot one, and you walk out and you're staring at like a pig's head and a bunch of limbs and stuff. Right in entry. Oh, it's the closet. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I tell you what, haunting is just, it's just fun.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That first scare you get every season fuels the adrenaline for the rest of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But as I look at the clock on the wall, we're starting to wind down. So let's get a little more information about you guys. Let's throw out some, how people can find out more about you, about your podcast, things like that.
Yeah, well. Yeah. We're Haunt Weekly. It's hauntweekly.com. We record every Sunday. Mm-hmm. We record live on Facebook, live at facebook.com/hauntweekly. Feel free to join us. Hop in the chat. Tell us all the ways we're stupid poopy heads and that we're wrong. Feel free.
And answer the question.
But please answer the question of the week if you do. Please take a moment to do that. We post the actual recorded version on Monday. You can find more about us at facebook.com/hauntweekly. We're Haunt Weekly on Twitter. youtube.com/hauntweekly is probably the easiest way to get all the previous episodes. Every episode we've ever done is available there. And like I said, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or anywhere else you want to find us, we're available.
Yep.
Right on. Awesome. Donnie, anything final for our guests?
No, I think we covered all the bases and got a lot of good information. And so it was a lot of fun.
It was, and I got to say that. And let me just say, for everybody listening and watching, you know, Wrestle Horror, WrestleHorror.com, Haunt Weekly, HauntWeekly.com, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
See, there you go. You get wrestling and horror, you get horror, you got hosts that love wrestling, you got hosts that love wrestling and horror. You know, you can't go wrong with either podcast. Check us out. Check them out. I'm Meat Hook Jim for the Wrestle Horror Podcast.
And also, before you close us out, listen to both podcasts and subscribe, like, and review.
Thank you. That's what I meant to get in there. I'm glad you brought that up. Right. Yes, please subscribe. Whatever podcast avenue or service you use, make sure you give us a like. If you like something, let us know. If you don't like something, let us know. And I'm sure that probably goes the same for Haunt Weekly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover and our guests, Jonathan Crystal from Haunt Weekly. This is the Wrestle Horror Podcast, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.